facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Magnificent Monday to you. So glad you're joining me today. This is Cale Clark. You can call me 1-888-914-9149. Once again, that number to call, toll free, 1-888-914-9149. You can also follow me on Twitter and send me a tweet. That would be a great tweet for me. And by tweet, I mean a treat. At Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address is kale@relevantradio.com. We got a jam-packed show for you today. Grace Williams from Children of the Immaculate Heart will be joining us later in the program. You're going to want to hear what she has to say about how to stop human trafficking and how to help people who are involved with that. And of course, today is the feast day of St. Josephine Bakita. And she is, of course, a patron saint of those who are victims of trafficking. And we'll tell you a little bit more about her life in the next few minutes. But obviously, today is the day after the Super Bowl. I'm a little bit bleary-eyed. I don't know about you. I stayed up way too late watching the festivities, the postmortems, all that stuff. I do it every year. I can't get enough. And every year when the Super Bowl happens, I get a little deja vu. It's like Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again. Today, because right around the time of the Super Bowl, it's my daughter's birthday. It's also my dad's birthday. My dad's birthday was yesterday, February the 7th. And he turned 77 years young yesterday. So happy birthday, Dad. Love you very much. And today, the 8th, also the feast day of Josephine Bakita, it's my daughter Michaela's birthday. And she turned 5 today. So happy birthday, Michaela. We love you. And I got to tell you, Lucas, do you have a little musical clip? Or
happy birthday to you. Shake your tail with the doggy crew. Give a yip, yip, and a backflip. Happy birthday to you.
Was that from Paw Patrol?
You are Lucas? Correct. That's from Paw Patrol.
Well, that was great. That's one of Michaela's favorite shows. And I know she's listening right now. So that was for you, Michaela, from producer Lucas. So happy birthday from Lucas and me, of course, and mommy and everybody. And everybody involved with the Cale Clark Show and all of our listeners, too. So say a prayer for Michaela. And I got to tell you, the 5 years ago, it seems like yesterday when she was born. And we actually had a birthday party for my dad. And that was, it's always around this time, but the Super Bowl also was on my dad's birthday in 2016, February of 2016. And that's, the year that Michaela was born 5 years ago. It was after the 2015 football season. I measured time in NFL seasons. That's the 2015 season. Of course, that Super Bowl, that was Super Bowl 50. That was the only year they didn't use Roman numerals for the Super Bowl. They went to regular old numbers, and I kind of wish they kept it that way, but my Latin is terrible. My Roman numerals are awful, but hard to count sometimes. You know, LXVIII, what does that mean? But anyways, it was Super Bowl 50. That was the golden anniversary. They just went with the plain old gold number 50, and that Super Bowl was between who? Do you remember Patrick Alog? Are you there, Patrick?
I do. Denver defeated Carolina in Santa Clara, California.
That is correct, man. He's a walking Wikipedia when it comes to sports. And who played quarterback for the Denver Broncos in that Super Bowl?
Hall of Famer Peyton Manning.
Wrong.
No, for the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, Hall of Famer Peyton Manning.
No, it was actually the corpse of Peyton Manning.
Oh, come on.
But no, Peyton Manning is alive and well, by the way. He actually was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And that was a great surprise not really much of a surprise, actually, but during the NFL Honors broadcast the night before the Super Bowl, they revealed the Hall of Fame inductees for this year, and he's one of them. But no, his skills were just a little bit, just a tiny bit diminished that year when he finally got that second victory, that second Super Bowl in his career with the Broncos. Now, a couple years before that, Peyton Manning just tore up the league. Remember, he threw for 55 touchdown passes. And they were just unstoppable. What happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object? Well, that happened in that particular Super Bowl when the Broncos played the Seattle Seahawks. And this was in New York, in New Jersey, to be exact, at Giants Stadium. I don't know. Actually, it's called MetLife Stadium. But it was an outdoor Super Bowl in the cold that had never been tried before. And I'm not sure if the weather affected things. It probably didn't. But I'll tell you what, the immovable object won that game. The Seahawks blew out the Broncos in that Super Bowl. Very reminiscent about what happened last night if you watched the game. And I'm sure that many of you did, or at least had some passing, following what was going on. And it, just a blowout by the Buccaneers. Unbelievable. And in fact, we had talked about Tom and Giselle, Tom Brady and his wife, Giselle Bundchen, and her. And, you know, actually during the game, Trish said to me, "Kale, you really shouldn't have said on the program that Giselle is a witch." And I said, "I didn't say that. She said that she's a witch. She said, you know, hey, you're lucky you married a witch." She said that to Tom Brady. She's got all these weird rituals, these magical rituals, quote unquote, that she makes Tom do before every game. And I don't know if she comes from a Catholic background or not. She's from Brazil. She may have a nominal Catholic background. I don't know. I do know this. Tom Brady is Catholic. He's probably not fully practicing his faith by the sounds, but some of the stuff he's into. But, you know, we got to pray for him. Make Tom Catholic again. Not just Tom Cruise, but Tom Brady as well. And we got to pray for him. And I got a couple emails about this, actually. A guy named Anthony, who's listening in Chicago on AM 950, he said, "Man, Giselle, maybe she is into some dark arts. There's no way the Buccaneers should have won that game." I'm not so sure about that. I actually picked the Buccaneers. I went against my old friend Rich Gannon, who was on the program on Friday, and he had picked the Chiefs to win. And I don't know if I actually publicly said this on Relevant Radio, but I did think the Bucs were going to win. But I didn't think it'd be by that much. I thought it'd be 28-24 or something like that. That'd be a really close game. I did not see that blowout coming. But I did know the Chiefs had some major holes in their offensive line, and Tampa Bay is a great pass rush, great back end, great defensive backs, and man, their defense really took it to them. Brady played great, don't get me wrong, but it was really the defense that won that game. They had Mahomes on the run all night. Anyway, so back to the story about Michaela. So after the 2016 Super Bowl, my dad had turned 72 at the time. We had a great party at my sister's place. She lives about 2 hours away from me, so it was a bit of a long drive home, pretty late night. And Trish was really pregnant at the time, but she wasn't scheduled to give birth till, I don't think it was February the 27th, I think was her actual due date. And this was, of course, February, the early morning hours of February the 8th. So we get home from my dad's birthday party / Super Bowl 50 party. And I laid down, I closed my eyes. It was about 1:30 in the morning. And as soon as I closed my eyes, folks, Trish said, "I think my water broke." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me." And sure enough, like we're like, "Oh, is this it? I'm not really sure." "Oh yeah, yeah." And then there's a lot of water here. This maybe, ladies, you know what I'm talking about. This is it for sure. And then she started having the contractions, and Trish said, "Oh, stuff just got real. Now, that's not an exact quote. She didn't actually say that. She said something a little bit more colorful, but this is a family program. I'll just leave it at that. Having said that, I said, "Listen," I had the presence of mind to tell her, "You know what you need to do? We're not just going to rush to the hospital right now. You need to actually go and have a shower." She said, "What? What are you talking about? We got to get to the hospital." I said, "Trust me. They always say that the first baby, you could literally drive 5 hours and still be in time for labor because it takes a long, long time usually. Second kids, third kids, fourth kids, sometimes they come a lot quicker. But listen, I think we've got time. Go have a shower. Going to make sure the bag is packed and we'll be all set." And later on, she was so thankful that I said that because it was a long time before she got to have another one. Anyway, so we get to the hospital and I was like, "I'm never going to sleep again. I wish I'd came home earlier from the Super Bowl party. I wish I left at halftime." That's not me though. I would never do that. And I was like, "Oh, I guess I'll never sleep again. Cause now I'm a parent. Forget it. It's never going to happen." So I was literally a walking zombie. And Michaela was born, delivered safely. I was so happy. It was great. I started calling everybody, called my parents, called my in-laws, let them know. And I called my pastor as well, Father Joe, cause he was praying for us. I said, "Father Joe, my daughter was born. She's healthy. It's unbelievable. It's amazing." And Father Joe said, "And her name is Josephine?" And I said, "What? And her name is Josephine? Joseph, what are you talking about?" I was thinking, does Father Joe want me to name her after him? You know, Joe, you know, Josephine? It took me a long time to clear my foggy head. He said, "No, it's the feast day of Josephine Bakita." I was like, "Wow, thanks for reminding me of that. But we already had a name picked out. It's Michaela, and she wasn't supposed to be born today, but here she is." And anyhow, so I do, of course, ask for the intercession of St. Josephine Bakita for my daughter because she was born on her feast day. So we'll tell you a little bit more about her as we go along today. And you know what? With the Super Bowl, and again, as we mentioned off the top, she's patron saint of victims of human trafficking, because that actually happened to her. It's a very serious topic. We're going to be talking about it on the show today. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. And unfortunately, during events like the Super Bowl, when there are a lot of people, there's a lot of travel, there's a lot of out-of-town people coming into big events like this, somewhat less so this year, obviously, because of COVID. But they did a really good job last night, by the way, at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, making it look full. They had a lot of cardboard cutouts in the stands. And there were a lot of real people there, too, trust me. But anyways, packed crowd. But usually during the Super Bowl week, a lot of people from all around the world will descend upon the host city. And tragically, events like this, events like the World Cup of Soccer, any major event will have its share of unseemly activity and downright sinful activity. And in fact, I've been to that stadium before. And when you're getting near that place, getting near the stadium in Tampa, there are all these seedy strip clubs there and places like that. And the AP, the Associated Press, a couple of days ago, before the Super Bowl, ran a story about just trying to shed light on this evil practice, and talked about Kirk Cousins, who is the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. We've got a lot of Relevant Radio listeners in Minnesota. And Kirk Cousins, of course, used to be with the Washington now football team. And when Kirk Cousins was 16 years old, he went to his family's church in Michigan, where he grew up, and he learned about human trafficking for the first time. He listened to a presentation at his family's church, and he was shocked because a lot of victims, millions of victims of human trafficking, are younger than Kirk Cousins was at that time when he was 16 years old. And he just remembers being cut to the heart and being really convicted and thinking, you know, what can I do to help? What can I do about this evil situation? What's a way that we can help eradicate this? And as he eventually became an NFL quarterback, he found himself with a platform where he could actually do a lot of good to help. And when he was with Washington in 2012, one of his teammates invited him to attend a benefit for an organization called the International Justice Mission. And in fact, the founder of that organization was the person who had spoken at his church when he was 16 years old. He realized that. And the International Justice Mission, what they do is they work to stop trafficking by rescuing and restoring victims, hold perpetrators accountable, and trying to strengthen the justice systems that are out there to try to prevent this from happening and try to create appropriate penalties for those who would perpetrate such heinous acts. And so he's raised a lot of awareness about this, and a lot of other NFL players have too, including the McCourty brothers, these twin brothers who play for the New England Patriots, Jason McCourty and Devin McCourty. And this is a huge problem. And a lot of people are not aware of how big the problem really is. And Grace Williams will be joining us in just a few moments to talk more about this. But last I heard, there are apparently 40 million people estimated who are victims of modern slavery worldwide. And slavery is not something from long ago. There's human trafficking. Some people who are trafficked for slave labor. And other people are trafficked into sex slavery. But according to the U.S. State Department, there are right now 25 million humans being trafficked around the globe. And many of those victims, unfortunately, are children as well. One in four victims are children. And so people really need to understand what a big problem this is. And for Kirk Cousins, who has a three-year-old son now, you know, as a parent, he said, I think about as he's growing up, eventually, as he starts going to school, someone's going to criticize my son. Someone's going to bully him. That's part of life. That would infuriate me enough as a parent, but you can imagine all the more. Imagine if your child was actually trafficked. It's hard to even imagine such a horrific, you know, nightmarish scenario, but this does happen to people. It happens in the millions, and something must be done about this. And so we're going to talk much more about this in just a few moments with Grace Williams. And let me tell you a little bit about St. Josephine Bakita, because Her feast day is today, of course, and she's a patron saint of victims of this horrific evil. And because it's also Black History Month, it's important for us to know about this saint, too. She was born in Sudan in 1869 in a small village in the Darfur region of that country. And she was actually kidnapped and sold into slavery while she was working in the fields with her family. Her captors, and she was about, I think, 7 years old when this happened to her. Her captors asked what her name was, and she was so terrified, she couldn't even remember her name. So they gave her a name. They called her Bakita, which means fortunate in Arabic. Now, she didn't seem so fortunate at the time, but she felt herself fortunate much later. But in the first years of her life, she unfortunately experienced a lot of horrific evil. She was tortured by her various owners. They branded her body. They beat her. They cut her. And in her biography, she talked about one particularly terrifying moment. One of her owners cut her 114 times and actually made it far worse by pouring salt in all of those wounds, if you can imagine that, to ensure that those scars would always remain. And she said, I felt like I was going to die at any moment, especially when they put the salt in my wounds. And she bore that suffering valiantly. Now, what's amazing about this is that she wasn't even a Christian at that time. She didn't know anything about the redemptive nature of suffering. But she did think there's got to be a creator. Despite the evil that's happening to me, there has to be a powerful creator. She said, I would see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and I said to myself, who could be the master of these beautiful things? And I felt a great desire to see him, to know him, and to pay him homage. And she was sold as a slave a total of 5 different times, and she was eventually purchased by a man named Callisto Legnani, who was the Italian consul, I guess an ambassador of sorts, in Khartoum, the capital of the Sudan. And 2 years later, he took Bakita to Italy, where he was from, and she began to start work as a nanny for his colleague, and his name was Augusto Michelli. And Michelli, in turn, sent Bakita with his daughter, she was looking after his daughter, to a school in Venice. And that school happened to be run by the Canossian Sisters, a religious order. And while she was there, she felt inspired to want to learn more about the Catholic faith. And she eventually took instruction in the faith. She became a believer in Jesus Christ and in his church. And she was baptized with the name Josephine Margaret. So that's where she got the name Josephine Bakita from. Now, in the meantime, her owner at this point wanted Josephine and his daughter to go back to the Sudan. But Josephine said, no, I refuse to return. So this created a huge fight. This disagreement eventually wound its way into the courts in Italy, and it was ruled that Josephine could actually remain in Italy because she was actually a free woman in Italy. Slavery was not recognized in Italy, and it was actually also illegal in Sudan, where Bakita was from, even before she was born. And so this was obviously a situation in which she was kidnapped into a human trafficking situation. So Josephine stayed in Italy, and she actually decided to also enter the religious life and join the Canossian Sisters in 1893. So she made her final religious vows in 1896, and she eventually went to northern Italy, and she dedicated the rest of her life to assisting her community and teaching others to love God. Well known for her smile, and if you see photos of her, you see this beautiful, serene smile on her face. She was very gentle and obviously very holy, and the holiness of her life really attracted people. And she said this, and she really was an example and a model of forgiveness. And she went on record as saying this, and I quote from her, from Josephine Bakita. She said, if I were to meet the slave traders who kidnapped me and even those who tortured me, I would kneel and kiss their hands. For if that did not happen, I would not be a Christian and I would not be a religious today. I would not be a nun today. End of quote. So she was beatified in 1992, and actually she was beatified on the same day as St. Jose Maria Escrivá was beatified, and she was canonized very quickly after, in October of 2000, by Pope John Paul II. She's the first person to be canonized from Sudan, and she's actually the patron saint of that country as well. And she's an important saint for our modern world, and this terrible and evil situation of modern-day slavery that we find ourselves in. So we're going to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. But when we come back, I'll be joined by Grace Williams, the founder and executive director of the Children of the Immaculate Heart. We'll be right back.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So glad that you've joined me. And I really want to thank everybody listening today, everybody who has supported Relevant Radio. Last week, of course, was our winter pledge drive. And the title of that was Give from the Heart. That was our theme. And you certainly did. We exceeded our goal. Our goal was $2.7 million that we needed to raise to operate all of the Relevant Radio stations and all of our great programming over the next quarter of the year. And you guys went above and beyond. As of this moment, we're over the $2.8 million mark, and we just thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And if you wanted to give, but you didn't get a chance to last week, it's not too late. You can still make a tax-deductible donation by calling 1-877-291-0123, or you can go to relevantradio.com, or of course, do it through the Relevant Radio app. And once again, we thank you for supporting Catholic Radio, Relevant Radio, reaching the world for Christ through the media. That's our goal, and that's what we try to do every single day on this program. So as I mentioned, I'm going to be joined in just a few moments by a very special guest. We will be talking about a very serious topic. So I want to say, if you're listening today, and if you have young children who are around, or maybe you're a little bit sensitive to some of the stuff, you just might want to have a little bit of discretion, because we will be talking about a serious topic, and it's the topic of human trafficking. Today is the feast day of St. Josephine Bikita, who is patron saint of victims of human trafficking, because it happened to her as well. And so we need to require, you know, we really need to rely on her prayers as we try to combat this evil in our society. And I'm joined right now by the founder and executive director of an organization that serves survivors of sex trafficking and opens the door to their restoration in Jesus Christ. The organization is called the Children of the Immaculate Heart, and she is called Grace Williams, and she joins us now from her home in San Diego. Welcome to the program, Grace. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on the program, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us on what's a very busy day for your organization. We'll talk about that in just a few moments, but for our listeners, can you explain to us exactly what human trafficking actually is?
Yeah, I mean, so in the United States, the legal definition of human trafficking is anything that uses mm-hmm. force, fraud, or coercion. So those are kind of the key words, like force, mm-hmm. fraud, or coercion to induce either forced labor, which we typically call labor trafficking, but that can have a bunch of different faces to it. A lot of times we mm-hmm. see that in agricultural and hospitality industries, where people's like maybe a lot of that is international victims of trafficking, so their papers mm-hmm. might be confiscated, you know, they're forced to work without pay, or they're kind of held in debt bondage while U.S. is money for getting into the country, and so you have to, you know, work for us for nothing. You know, massage parlors, that kind of thing happens as well. Forced fraud or coercion to induce forced commercial sex acts. So, you know, what typically people know as prostitution is anything mm-hmm. like that when there is force, fraud, or coercion involved. So there's a trafficker who's involved, who's and usually it's not force. Force is pretty easy to prove, but mm-hmm. it's a lot of fraud and coercion, a lot of psychological manipulation. And, you know, in the United States, the average age of entry, you know, is somewhere in the mid-teens. I mean, there's different studies that show different age. In San Diego, it's like 16 years old is the average age of entry. The national numbers tend to be a little bit lower than that. But in any case, you know, we're talking about mid-teenage years as like the most prime target. So they're kids who already have some pretty traumatic histories who are then getting picked up by traffickers, so it's just like trauma on top of another trauma. And that's the population that we work okay. with at Children of the Immaculate Heart is sex trafficking survivors.
My guest is Grace Williams. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Grace Williams is the founder and executive director of the Children of the Immaculate Heart. Again, an organization that serves survivors of sex trafficking and helps them to restore their lives in Jesus Christ. And if you have a question for Grace about this, you can call the studio line. She's willing to take your questions on this very important topic. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. 1-888-914-9149. I want to ask you, Grace, how bad is this problem in terms of how many people this affects in the United States every year? A lot of people aren't aware of this.
Yeah, you know, I should be better at national statistics. I've like completely immersed myself in San Diego for like 8 years, so I'm much more familiar with here. I mean, here in San Diego County alone, you know, we have between 4,000 and 8,000 victims a year just in San Diego County.
My goodness.
I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands when you look at the whole country, but I'm trying to... The Polaris Project has a lot of the best statistics for what's happening nationally. They have a national human trafficking hotline number, which is a good thing for people to call if they ever see anything that they want to report or suspect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's super, I mean, it's unfortunately much more prevalent than most people think. It's not any one part of the population. People tend to be surprised by that. I mean, here in San Diego, 80% of sex trafficking victims are American-born citizens. So people tend to think of it as the way it's very dramatic in movies, but it's really our own teenage kids, you know, who are getting picked up.
Well, you mentioned earlier, Grace, that my guest is Grace Williams from Children of the Immaculate Heart. You mentioned earlier that the average age of those who are unfortunately get involved in being trafficked is quite young. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the perpetrators of these crimes. Exactly. Who do they tend to be? Are they gangs or is it organized crime? Exactly. Who is responsible in general for this type of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is largely gang involved here in the U.S. Different countries, it has a little bit of a different face. But yeah, definitely an organized crime situation. I mean, gangs have turned to this because it's extremely lucrative. Not only is there, unfortunately, a demand in our society, meaning people who want to pay for commercial sex, but also they can sell a girl, you know, 10 times in one night. A drug you can only sell one time. And a drug, if you're caught with, it's immediately something you could be arrested for, right? Whether you're using, buying, selling, or just carrying, it's all illegal. But you actually have to be able to prove a crime to arrest someone. And this is pretty behind the scenes stuff. So it's just quite challenging. Law enforcement really has, you know, their hands full in a sense, prosecution and whatnot to build these cases against traffickers, because it's just all, you know, quote unquote dates that are set up online, and then they meet in a hotel room, and it's all just kind of behind the scenes and not that easy to track. Yeah, in any case, it's largely gangs, but the really tragic part, I heard a great speaker a couple of times on this. She worked with sex offenders who are coming out of prison, and she had several traffickers who were her clients, and it was like a mandated thing as part of their probation or whatever, right? But it was really interesting insight, because every single man that she worked with had been jumped into a gang, you know, by the time he was 7 years old, and not a single one of them knew who their biological father was. And they were basically like groomed to recruit girls from the time that they were kids. And so their first girlfriend, which was kind of a normal experience as a teenager, became their first girl that worked for them. And she then became a recruiter for other girls. It's like very, very typical patterns. So it's just really sad, because it's like also these kids, these boys who don't have male role models, who find the male role models in gangs, and then who are you know. So it's, the whole thing is just a big hot mess.
Yeah, and they're obviously very vulnerable as well when they get put into these gangs and forced into these gangs. And I'm, by the way, I'm joined by Grace Williams on the Cale Clark Show. Grace is the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart, that serves survivors of sex trafficking and helps them to restore their lives in Christ. And let me ask you this, Grace. A lot of people want to, they're curious about this. They say, if someone is not being physically held against their will in a trafficking situation, why doesn't the victim just leave and go to the authorities? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really common question, but it's just not like that. And first of all, usually someone who's in this life doesn't have anywhere to go. I mean, a lot of times people get in this life because they don't have supportive family. So if you're 15 years old and you end up getting recruited, like probably you got recruited because your family situation was like abusive or neglective. And so there's not exactly a place to go back to, first of all.
Okay.
And second of all, usually people don't necessarily identify as victims of a crime. Our human psyches are so complex, you know?
Yeah.
Typically, especially when girls are younger, because they're just not even fully developed psychologically, right? So it's much easier to manipulate someone who's younger. They see this person as their boyfriend. And maybe things aren't the best, but guess what? Maybe someone in their family sexually abused them before, and now at least they're like making money off of it. You know, I mean, I've heard clients say these kinds of things. It's just so sad because they already, a lot of times are coming with a history of like neglect and abuse. And so in the case of neglect, I mean, I've heard a woman say, one second, sorry. I'm actually at our house right now. So someone just popped in the office and I'm like, oh, wait, no sorry worries. About that.
This is live radio. Come on.
Yeah.
Leave her alone, please. Close the door. Okay. Do not disturb. Yeah, yeah.
The sign is there, but you know.
So in terms of neglect.
You know what? That their trafficker was a person who'd been there the most for them in their whole life. And so like when that guy is actually showing up for you every day, even though it's messed up in some ways, also like no one's ever done that for you. So it's just like, it's so hard. And then there's of course just like all the psychological things like Stockholm syndrome and trauma bonds and stuff. But it's just very complicated on a purely psychological level of like, you know, being attached to this person, and you have a lot of like attachment issues for therapists out there. So and combined with just a complete lack of opportunity. I mean, when the study was done that I mentioned that showed there were between 4,000 and 8,000 victims in San Diego County, at the time there were of the study, which was like 4 years ago, there was like I think 32 beds available for trafficking survivors in San Diego County. So you have 32 beds for 4,000 to 8,000 people who need them. And at that time, none of those beds were for teenagers. I mean, it was all for women over 18. And we've since opened a home for teenagers, and so has another group. So now there's maybe like 50 beds or something. But I mean, it's just like a highly underserved population. Yeah.
It's still not enough. My guest is Grace Williams. She's the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart, who help survivors of sex trafficking. And Grace, I think maybe now, just we have to take a quick break in a second, but I wanted you just really quickly to outline. We've got a lot of people who want to call, and we're on hold right now on the phones who want to talk to you and have questions for you. But before we go to break, I want you just to run down what exactly you provide. What are the services you provide? You just alluded to it just a moment ago for girls and also I don't know if you serve young men as well who've been victims of this, but older women, younger women, families. How do you serve these people, and what exactly?
Yeah, so we have two programs. One is for women over the age of 18 who have children who are coming out of this life. And it just happened that, when we started, the need was there. There was a number of programs in town, but none of them took you if you had kids. So we started to focus on that population. So we have like 8 women and I don't know how many, 17 kids or so in that program right now. And that we have housing and case management therapy. Before COVID, we had a support group and just assistance with like transportation or if they want help getting into school or finding a job. And then in our other program, which is called The Refuge, it's a license. It's called a short-term residential therapeutic program. It's a special kind of group home that California has that is an intensive like 6-month period for youth to receive like mental health treatment. So it's a residence, but we have on-site schooling and on-site therapy, group therapy, drug and alcohol treatment. And it's all kids who are coming from foster care or probation. So all kids who are like in the system.
Okay.
But then we're also trafficked on top of that. So they're sent here by social workers.
Okay. My guest is Grace Williams. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show. Grace is the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. We'll come back with much more from Grace as we deal with this issue of human trafficking on the feast day of St. Josephine Bikita, and also your questions, your phone calls on The Cale Clark Show. We'll be back right after this. 1-888-914-9149.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Believe it or not, and you probably can't believe this, I can barely believe it myself, Lent actually starts next week. Believe it or not, next Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, the 17th, and we want you to get some help on your Lenten journey this year, and we can do that. We can give you the help you need with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons. On the Mass, it's all about the Mass. We're going to break it down like you've never had it explained before. And when you sign up for Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons, you're going to receive a daily email where Father's going to walk you through all the different parts of the Mass. And you can read or listen to Father give a detailed explanation of a certain aspect of our beautiful Catholic liturgy. Plus, you're also going to receive a daily bonus video to accompany each lesson where Father Rocky gives you kind of a behind-the-scenes look and a more detailed explanation of all these different sections, all these different parts of the liturgy. So the first one, the first Lenten lesson from Father Rocky is going to be sent in. That's next week. So sign up now by just clicking on the banner on the Relevant Radio app or going to relevantradio.com. And I'm joined today on the program by Grace Williams, who is the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart, which is a charity, a 501c charity organization that serves survivors of sex trafficking and also opens the door to their restoration in Jesus Christ. And once again, we're talking about some pretty serious issues here. So if you do have little ears listening, you might want to cover them up or maybe have them go to a different room, because this can be a topic that can be hard to hear for a lot of people, but it's a truth that we have to confront and focus on, because it is happening to millions of people all across the world and certainly also in the United States of America. And Grace, we're going to go to a phone call for you. Rosalind is on the line from Vista, California. Rosalind, go ahead with your question for Grace Williams.
Hi, Grace. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
All the work you're doing. I'd like to know how to recognize a child on the street is a likely scenario for being trafficked, to say and do then. I mean, by the time you call the authorities, that guy's gone. And
right.
So, or whomever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you see something on the street that's clearly like, a young girl who's maybe dressed not warm enough for whatever the weather might be, it looks like she could be getting into a car, and there's some guy on the street, and she keeps, like, if you're just watching a street corner, she keeps coming back, and it's like, clearly this is like what's going on, you can absolutely call 911. I mean, it's encouraged, because the thing is, even if they don't get hurt that day, they can build a case, if what the car looked like, or you had a description of her, or saw some guy standing across the street who was always watching her and had a description of him, which is often, the trafficker is usually close by, but not right next to her. That's like a great piece of information for law enforcement, or even to know where it's happening, like this corner. So all of that goes into building a case, which can sometimes take quite some time to build. So always worth, calling 911 for. If there's a kid that maybe you have more frequent contact with, like if you worked at a school or at church or something, and you saw a young girl who like maybe starts showing up with like much more expensive items than she or her family would normally be able to afford, or if she's like just dropping out of school on Fridays, or even just has kind of just checked out, like what happened with any kind of trauma, just like not really connecting with people, like more aloof. Those are all like kind of common signs. and something that you might want to look into, whether it's talking to the youth themselves or if there's like a school counselor that the kid could talk to. But those are all just common things, like kids just start to often even drop out of school altogether or just attend irregularly, especially if they have cell phones. You know, they might be getting a message to their phone and then going out, and or maybe it could even be, I mean, sometimes it's just texting pictures of themselves, like nude photos and stuff. It's pretty common these days. So stuff like that, behaviors like that, are definitely things to look out for.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And thank you for your call, Rosalind. Yeah, a lot of parents want to know, or really just anyone who's concerned about someone they love falling prey to trafficking, the sorts of things they should be aware of, warning signs they should be looking out for. So I think you've covered some of them. Are there any others that you would say?
I'm trying to think. I mean, it's hard because a lot of signs, like on a level of mental health, like, you know, eating disorders or just anxiety, depression, like, can be caused by many kinds of trauma. Yeah. So you don't know that it's this. But that's, I mean, if you're seeing stuff like that, there's a reason. Like, that doesn't just happen for no reason. So, if you have a youth who seems to be going through that, like, it's definitely something that you want to make sure that they have someone that they can trust and talk to about whatever is going on. But for parents, I would absolutely advise, and I know, of course, if I were a teenager, I would have hated this, but like, I mean, you know, like, you just have to monitor your kids' social media stuff. Like, I mean, it's just unfortunate, like, that there are, you know, predatorial people out there, but there are.
There certainly are.
So, yeah, I would just strongly recommend that.
Yeah, that's a good point. My guest is Grace Williams, the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. They fight sex trafficking and help survivors of human trafficking. And something that's kind of related to social media, Grace, that you just kind of touched on a little bit. You know, when it comes to human trafficking, I think a lot of people see the connection between that and prostitution, and that's pretty clear. But when it comes to the plague of pornography, really the pandemic of pornography in our culture today, can you speak to that? And many people don't see that there is a connection between trafficking and pornography. It's not an innocent or victimless situation. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's actually, it's a pretty big connection and on several fronts. I mean, for one, it's not uncommon that pornographic images could be of a trafficked person. So like the person who's in these images, it wasn't like just doing this because it's what they want to do. So there can be like forced fraud and coercion in pornography industry stuff too, or overlap, you know? So that's like one really direct way, like you could be like directly participating in someone being trafficked by looking at these images.
Right.
The second way is traffickers will use pornography to groom girls or boys or women that they're recruiting. So they'll like make them look at porn so that they know what people want them to do. And the third way, which in some ways is, I don't know, I mean, they're all tragic, but it's like extremely tragic, is just every addiction works the same way. Like you always need a higher peak, right? There's some great like groups out there like Fight the New Drug, and of course all of Matt Fraud's work. Research shows that in your brain, when someone first looks at pornography, they have like this dopamine rush in their head, right? So you get this immense sense of pleasure. And then it's like too much, it's like overload, because it's not normal. So actually your receptors recede. And so in order to get the same feeling the next time, you have to do something more. And so eventually, you know, and this is what leads to like addiction, that craving, right? And so eventually, and it's not always the case, but it's also, again, not uncommon that after someone starts looking at porn, then of course they want to act these things out. So I, know survivors who have said that that buyers would bring pornography and show it to them and say that this is what they wanted to do with them. So like, it's just such a bad path to start down, because like any addiction is, but it's just pretty, you know, pretty destructive and pretty intertwined with the whole trafficking world.
Yeah, and that is a very, very important thing to say, Grace. And my guest is Grace Williams from Children of the Immaculate Heart, an organization, a charity that helps survivors of sex trafficking and helps them to restore their lives in Jesus Christ. That is so important for people to know. We're only now beginning to scratch the surface of the social costs of pornography, and it's obviously highly tied in with human trafficking, whether people want to admit that or not. And let me just add, by the way, I want to make sure we get this in there. You've got a very special event that Children of the Immaculate Heart is running tonight. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It's not too late for people to sign up. What's it all about?
Yeah, so we are very grateful and pleased to be able to be with Archbishop Cordiglione of San Francisco this evening with the Benedict XVI Institute, which promotes sacred music, and a dear friend of ours is one of their staff who teaches chant and polyphony. Wow. She taught me for like 5 years or something, so she's a good friend.
Wow.
So yeah, we have a joint event tonight. They're the Benedict XVI Institute this month. Fighting homelessness, and one of the topics related to homelessness that they posed was human trafficking. So it's a little fundraiser tonight in honor of Saint Bikita on her feast day, just for people to learn more about our work and more about the work of the Institute. And it's there's a link on our website, which is childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org.
Yeah, and that's important to give out this website. It's childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org. And it's funny that you mentioned Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione and the Benedict XVI Institute. He's a great friend of the program. He's been on the show before. So it's fantastic that you're partnering with the great Archbishop there. And this program is called Healing for Survivors of Sex Trafficking. It's done through Zoom. It's not too late to sign up. It's tonight, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. And you can go to childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org and look at the events section of the website to find more information about how you can sign up for that. It's really important. And let me just ask you this, Grace, how can people get involved with the work that you're doing at Children of the Immaculate Heart, and how can they give to help your cause?
Yeah. For those who are local in the San Diego County area, you're welcome to reach out to us if you're interested in volunteering in any capacity. For those who want to donate, you can donate on our website, which again is childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org/donate, or you can just find it in the pull down. We actually just purchased the home that we're using for the refuge, so we just closed after like 2 weeks ago, so we have a capital campaign going to pay off the house. Thank you. Yeah. We made it. Small miracle. So that we appreciate any support that anyone wants to give in that regard as well.
Oh, that's so great. And Grace, other than supporting the work of Children of the Immaculate Heart, what else can people do who are listening right now to help fight and stop human trafficking in our culture?
You know, it might sound funny, but the most important thing you can do if you are a parent who's listening right now is really to love your children. That's the most protective thing you can do for them. Fathers, to really like spend time with your kids so that they know that they're loved.
Wow.
Mothers, we have a lot of like mom issues among our clients. Mm-hmm. It's kids who don't actually have an identity. They don't know who they are because that was never given to them in a loving family situation. So like the biggest thing you can do to create that resilience in your kid is absolutely to like provide them with the best loving environment that you can and the most support system that you can. That's really, I would say, the number one thing people can do, because traffickers don't want kids who are going to run away, fight back, turn them in. I mean, I'll give an example. One trafficker who was interviewed in that study that I was talking about, he said that, he would go to a mall to recruit, girls. And if he would like give her a compliment. So if he was like, "Hey, you have a nice smile." And if she like kind of looked down and shifted and said like, "No, I don't." Then he knew that was his girl. Mm-hmm. But if he's like, "Hey, you have a nice smile." And she was like, "Thank you." He knew that girl wasn't for him because she didn't need.
She had confidence. Yeah.
Whereas the other girl, he could feed it. He could give her all the, "You're so beautiful. You're everything." And get her totally attached to him and then take advantage of her. So,
oh, it's so insidious. So insidious. Yeah. We really have to be aware of those signs. And I think you're right. Strong families, strong marriages are really the key. And the family is really the building block, the cell of society. So if we don't have strong families, you know, it just opens the door for all these evils. And that's a huge part of fighting the problem as well. I really want to thank you, Grace, for joining me today. We're almost out of time, but I really want to thank you for coming on the show and taking time out of your busy schedule with a big event tonight, Healing for Survivors of Trafficking. Yeah, you got it, Grace. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
No problem.
That was Grace Williams, the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. You can go to childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org to hear about their very important work fighting sex trafficking in the culture. And it's just such a scourge, and it's an uncomfortable topic to talk about, but we need to do it. We need to do it because we've got to face the problem in order to deal with this evil. You've been listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My producer was Lucas Holt. Karen Moran works social media and research for the show. Patrick Alog screened the calls. Really appreciate you joining me today. God bless you, and we'll see you tomorrow.